Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Conscious Vibe Podcast,
where we elevate intellect through conscious dialogue
while exploring race, politics, business, and culture.
I'm Dr. Daryl L. Jones.
And I'm Charles D. Mitchell.
What's going on, Charles?
DJ.
We're very close, man. I mean, it's just like you were more than everything, but God, duh. Like Siamese twins on this thing, aren't we?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Well, anyway.
It was perfect timing. Yeah.
You know what they call him. By.
I think I just heard it.
They call him D-Nice.
D-Nice.
Yeah. Dane and Hughes, what's up, man?
What's going on, fellas? Good to see y'all.
Good to see you again, my man.
Yeah.
Well, hey, been a while. It has, man. It has. So you are back with us. It's a pleasure to have you, man. So what's the latest? I mean, you know, part of the challenge in introducing you the first time was you wear so many hats. Have you added any hats? Have the hats gotten bigger, smaller? Like, where are you now, man?
Man, I don't know if they've gotten bigger, but they just are the same hats, I think. Still, my main job is still in the mortgage business. I think the last time we spoke, I was with U.S. Bank. I changed, was with them for a large part of my career in this business and moved over to a bank, smaller bank called Central Bank of the Midwest. Same role where I manage a team, but also originate loans, can originate all throughout the country. So that's been basically my main job since I stopped playing football back in 1999. So still doing that, but like my weekend job, I know you got a golf membership somewhere, you know, somewhere exclusive, DJ. So my golf membership is the broadcasting. That's what I say. My weekend job is the broadcasting. I'm able to do college basketball, college baseball, college football, and then obviously the main course is being in the broadcast booth with the Chiefs Radio Network. This is my third year being in the radio voice for the Kansas City Chiefs. I just signed another 3-year deal, so they're not going to be able to get rid of me anytime soon. So that's a blessing as well. So, I stay busy. I guess that's the same hats.
Well, you know, we dropped the ball, though, because one of the things we talked about was coming out for a Chiefs game. We haven't made that happen.
We haven't made that happen.
Yeah, we need to make that
so happen. So is that still on the table?
Absolutely, man. The door is open. I've been standing at the door waiting for y'all like a little puppy, trying to wait for y'all to come up, looking around both sides of the street. There go DJ. There go DJ. That ain't DJ. There go DJ. No, that ain't DJ.
Well, you know, we're going to show up one day, so I don't want your eyes to get big when we walk up on you in the booth. So listen, man, what a time to be a part of what's happening with the Kansas City Chiefs right now, man. I mean, obviously them bringing you back says a lot about how they feel about you and how you're connecting with the audience. So can you talk to us a little bit about being a part of that train that's moving right now?
Yeah, it's truly, truly been a blessing. I mean, the Chiefs, I played 6 years in the NFL. The Chiefs are the only team I played for as far as regular season. I had a little brief preseason stint with the New Orleans Saints before I retired. But this is the only football home that I've known here in Kansas City. And so 3 years ago, with them approaching me about the opportunity to be a part of the radio crew was an amazing blessing. It was a surprise. If you don't know the history of the Chiefs, pretty much the entire existence on radio, the voice of the Chiefs was Len Dawson, mm-hmm. a Hall of Fame quarterback. He was there for 33 years. They had a brief stint with Kendall Gammon, who also played not only here in Kansas City, but he actually was one of my teammates with the New Orleans Saints. So I've known him for years. And they wanted to make a change on the color side, and they opened the door for me. I had been here in Kansas City doing pregame and postgame shows, midweek kind of keys to victory type of shows for the Chiefs. And so it came out of the blue that they were trying to make a change after their Super Bowl win in 2020. And I was open, and the door opened for me. And it's been a huge blessing for me because I love still staying connected with football, still staying connected with sports. That's how I grew up, playing every sport imaginable. I love all sports. To my knowledge, I am the only color analyst that does professional football as well as college, major college, basketball, baseball, and football. So that's something that's near and dear to my heart, because most guys in this position, just they are specifically one sport. But because I had that background, and for all the listeners out there that have kids, it's kind of an endorsement of kids to not specialize in one sport, to play multiple sports. It's not only helped me as an athlete, but it's helped me to be more diverse in the broadcasting world. So being on the Big Ten Network, ESPN, doing college baseball, the World Series and regionals, as well as ESPN for college basketball and football, and then the Chiefs, has just been amazing to me. But here in Kansas City, especially what we have on the field with Patrick Mahomes and the magic that he's been providing, the excitement around what we call the Chiefs Kingdom has been amazing. And it's been really cool to be a part of that. I have my own radio show here in Kansas City during the football season. And one of the cool things, it's on every Thursday night. So when you're talking about how cool it's been to be a part of it, last night on my radio show, we had a guy who was visually impaired. He could not watch Chiefs football. And he called into my show and he talked about our impact and my impact in painting color about the game, because he used to be able to watch it. Now he can't see it. So, you know, it kind of hit me kind of close, like, wow, that's what I'm providing. And you kind of sometimes take that for granted, that there are people out there that can't literally watch the game. And the fact that I'm able to talk about what's happening on the field, where those people can visualize the catches by Travis Kelce, the big plays by Patrick Mahomes, the stops on defense, all the parts that we kind of glance through and watch and look at our phone and watch and kind of listen to. But there's people out there that are like, their Sundays and Mondays and Thursdays are banking on me delivering a message that they can be endeared, continue to be endeared to their Chiefs, their love, you know, their beloved Chiefs. So it's been a huge blessing for me, and to be able to do it for my team has been awesome.
That's fantastic, man. I can relate to that in terms of just, you know, you think about the visual of someone tuning in, whether they're, you know, let's say they're a truck driver and they can't be, you know, they can't be off of work and they're driving, they have to listen to the game, or, you know, they have a long commute from, you know, one place to another, and this is their main source of getting that sort of play by play and understanding exactly what's happening and being able to sort of see that in terms of how you describe it to people on the field. And the blind gentleman that you just referenced, wow, that's incredible.
It is incredible, because that, you know, oftentimes now, and even the Shannon Sharps of the world have pride themselves on watching the game and not listening to it. Yeah. They don't want to be jaded by it. But, you know, when someone comes to you and says, man, that's all I have.
Yeah.
That lays a whole different lens on what you do. So yeah. I'll ask you. Yeah. Let me ask you this question, Dane, and I'll give you a little time to think about it. You know, obviously you put your time in throughout your life playing football and other sports, and you play at a really high level in college. You play very, very well in college. You go on to play pro ball and you play 6 years. You're not the only player to have played with the Chiefs and left and still want to be a part of the organization in a significant way. Yeah. What is it about the Chiefs and how they think about you that puts so much value on what you do with them? Why do you think they think so highly of you?
Wow, that's a tough question, because it kind of brings me out of the humble zone and trying to figure out, you know, to talk about myself, so to speak. But you know what? This organization, and I'm sure every player on a former teams can probably attest to some kind of story that they love about the organization. But this specific organization, we have a group called the Chiefs Ambassadors. No other team has a group like this, where it's former Chiefs, that played at least for 3 years and are still connected to the Chiefs organization. So charity work in the community, public speaking, autograph sessions, mix and mingles, like we got cancer, kids cancer charities and other other diverse charities around Kansas City that we go and actively are a part of. And that was something that the late Lamar Hunt, the first owner of the Chiefs, really drove into us, is to be connected in the community. So, of course, because we have that group, we stay close to the Chiefs organization. So they see me. They've seen me all the time. I've seen everybody there. So it wasn't that far of a stretch for them to kind of look within that group to see who could be guys that they can have come in and do studio work. And that's kind of how it started, is that they called me and, hey, we got 64 Toss Power Trap Productions, that they're in-house Chiefs production. And they wanted me to do some of the studio work because I was doing some of the TV elsewhere and radio. And it just kind of took a life of its own. So I would say, to answer that question, because I stayed so close, I wasn't an all-pro. I wasn't a Pro Bowl guy. I was just a seventh-round pick, blue-collar, special teams, knucklehead, and third or fourth wide receiver for most of my career. And they, like, I just gravitated to them. They gravitated to me. Never had any issues off the field. Been married to my wife for 27 years. They got to know our family. They've seen my kids grow up. So all of that encompassed together kind of drew us together. And they knew that I loved the Chiefs, and they knew that, or felt that I knew the game of football. And I always say this, DJ, is that I don't see the game better than general fans. I just see it different. Like, I watch the game and I see all the moving parts that are happening in the game while most fans watch the ball. Like, I see everything. And like, if I watch one play in real life, in real speed, and then you stop it, I can tell you what all 22 people did at that time. And it's more of a mechanism for me. And then the challenge that I take, and I really take to heart, is how do I, within 10 to 15 seconds, tell the world what happened? Because that's all I got between plays, is 10 to 15 seconds to tell them what actually happened so that they can visualize and see it like I see it. And that's one of the things that's really drawn me to the broadcast booth and being a part of this organization. So it's kind of been a family atmosphere here in Kansas City that started in 1993 when I was drafted and hasn't stopped.
That's awesome.
Dana, you you talk about your love for the Chiefs and, you know, everything that you've said, and, you know, even in our previous conversation, you know, you really speak highly of the organization as a whole. And to me, that signals that there's something about the culture there that is doing things the right way relative to one. I think the biggest thing is taking care of players, and probably I would assume that means taking care of people within the organization, staff, people that impact your ability to go on the field and play the game and all those sorts of things. And to me, when I think about that big picture, it signals what it means to have an organization that's about winning, because I think winning. And I always think of the Chiefs as a historically is an organization that has won a whole lot in terms of from its very beginning back in the AFL, very successful franchise, you know, even obviously up to today with, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and what culture has been. But you watch them play football and it's like, you know, they can go down by you say how many points and you just know they're going to come back and probably win the game. And do you attribute a lot of that to that culture that you love so much? Is it the piece that is the obviously players' impact and coaches' impact, but do you think that is a big piece of what creates the winning environment?
100% I do. I think when you have a winning culture, when you talk about, you can talk about teams, organizations / programs. If you're talking about college, it's a program, but organizations, and then culture. And the culture here, whether they have, they win a Super Bowl or not. Let's remember, we went 50 years without getting to a Super Bowl. We went 20 plus years without winning a playoff game. And yet the culture never changed. I think there are a lot of organizations that have ups and downs, and they go through coaches like glasses of water, and they have turmoil outside of the football field, but you never or hardly ever have heard of that with the Kansas City Chiefs. And I believe it starts from the top down. The Hunt family is second to none in regards to how they really embrace people who come into the organization, from the secretaries to the security guys. There's still guys working security that were here when I was a rookie. And I just feel like it's always been that kind of culture here that drew people. I mean, we have people that are part of former players that are part of the Chiefs ambassadors that won Super Bowls elsewhere and moved here and stayed here in Kansas City and call this their home. When they played for the Giants, when they won Super Bowls, when they played for the Broncos, other teams in our division and won Super Bowls and had success, they still stay here. So it's about the community. Like, because I wore that jersey number 83 for 6 years, there's a platform that I've had for the last 20 plus years because of that. And it's just about the culture and the organization that there's a mesh together that makes it really, really special here.
That's amazing, D. So speaking of all of these hats, you have a wonderful wife, wonderful family. How about an update there with your offspring and your wife? How's everything going there?
Oh, I've been truly blessed, man. I'm married to my wife, Tiffany, who's the anchor of our family. And we've been married 27 and a half years. We have 5 kids. We are empty nesters now. So our youngest is 21. And has been out of the house. She's moved back, but she's getting an apartment soon. And we have 3 grandkids that are amazing. They all live here in the area. My older kids work in the community, Kansas City community. My son, who's my middle child, is in medical school, so he's definitely got his mom's brains. Like, I'll take credit. I know my lanes, DJ. Like, he played basketball in college. I'll take credit for the jump shot. But the medical school, like, I know that's my wife's side. Like, you know, I don't just analyze football. I analyze myself sometimes, too. So I know that. So I've been blessed with that dynamic, the family dynamic. I have some in-laws that have moved to Kansas City and made it their home. All of my immediate family and extended family are still in New Jersey. She's from New Jersey. So we've been speaking the same language for nearly 30 plus years now, and been truly blessed with that. So it's been amazing, man. It's a blessing that I know that I don't deserve. And I try never to take it for granted, because I've seen the other side. I've seen the flip side with a lot of my teammates, former teammates, friends as well. So yeah, I've been truly blessed.
So, you know, we follow each other on social media. I've probably posted 5 times. So, I mean, nobody's looking to get excited by my social media. But I'm seeing now there's another hat you have added that has to do with modeling. So, so my question. My question is... Tiffany must be a really strong woman to have trust for you out there, knowing that your modeling career is taking off too. Can we talk a little bit about that, D?
I can't. Hey, thankfully, I didn't have any juice in my mouth or any water in my mouth, because I probably would have spit it up right on my laptop. Okay. So what you're talking about is a once a year event.
Oh, you know what? Got it. Okay.
It's a once a year event. It's a charity event with the Chiefs where I go and it's called the Style Lounge, and I've been a part of it for probably 10 years now. So yeah, there's no modeling going on in here. You know, it's just,
I'm glad you cleared it up, man, because I wasn't sure. I just, I saw it, you know, I wasn't sure. So I thought I would ask, man, but looks good. All right. Mate looks good.
I believe
he really looks. He's a handsome man.
Yeah, I know. Handsome man. I believe it.
But no, man. But seriously though. Well, you're coming here when? Monday, right?
Yeah, I'm coming here this weekend after we play Cincinnati, flying back, and then flying out to Phoenix to play some golf and hang out with you, man. So yeah, I'll be out there for overnight for one day. Yeah.
Sure.
So are you able to do dinner, what, Monday night?
Yeah. Monday night dinner would work, for sure.
You want to get together? Do
yeah, dinner. You know, it's funny. One of my my actually roommate when I was in law school, who actually reconnected me with Eric Moses,
yep,
is here Monday too. And he's another brother. I mean, maybe all of us. He's having a dinner. And maybe we could have dinner, maybe meet up with him and his guys.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's plan on doing that, man.
Yeah, that'll work for sure.
That'd be really cool. You know, I wanted to ask you about, you know, you made the comment about, and I thought this was so spot on, about playing more than just that one sport. And, you know, as I think about that and what's happening right now with you're getting you have that background experience to be able to talk, you know, about basketball and baseball and football in terms of being a commentator and talking through those things. What are you seeing in those sports right now? I think college sports are so interesting, given that, you know, you got NIL, the transfer portal is so active.
It's heavy right
now. It's just a lot going on in those environments right now. And where do you see college sports going from your lens as you watch, like, for instance, and I'm thinking about those three, like baseball, basketball, football. Where do you see those things moving in terms of like how they impact the greater, you know, the greater environment around sports and NCAA obviously being a big part of that?
Yeah, I think the NIL was long overdue. And people have asked me that question for many years. And all I can tap into is personal stories for me. So DJ knows a bunch of the guys that I went to college with. We were all together in college. We all leaned on each other. And one thing we had in common is that we didn't have any money. And I think back to being at the University of Iowa, being from New Jersey. We had other brothers that are from New York, the East Coast, and we didn't have an opportunity to drive home or fly home for spring break or for Christmas breaks or anything like that. We used to pool our money together. We got $10 a week for per diem. And we pooled our money together to get pizza. And when the breaks came, we had to stay in the dorms and figure out how we were going to make it work with food and just enjoying a social life like other college students. So when people ask me about the NIL, I tell them about that part. I tell them about going to the student union. My number was number 3. I see the number 3 jersey hanging up on the shelves. I can't even buy my own jersey. And because in college world, because my name wasn't on the back of it, it never got tied to me. But who else is wearing number 3? Who else is an all Big Ten receiver? Going to Iowa where there's no other pro sports. So Iowa wrestling and a close number 2, Iowa football, is top shelf in the entire state. So how many times could I have made some money to fly home for breaks if I would have been able to do a camp? Or go to a car dealership or sit in a restaurant and sign autographs and take pictures. I was a 2-sport all-conference player. I'm the highest draft pick still to this day since 1990, the highest draft pick position player that from Iowa baseball still. And so that, you know, that was what was going on back then. For college athletes to have some control, just like college students. So when everybody wants to promote their student athletes, okay, well, if you want to put that student part first, let's treat them like the rest of the students. If there was a pianist or a saxophonist that wanted to go down to the local bar and play the piano for money, and they were on scholarship as playing their instrument, they could do that. But Athletes can't. You know, I mean, so there was that dynamic that to me was false and wrong from the beginning. So I'm glad that they've corrected it, and athletes can take control. From a coaching perspective and recruiting perspective, most of those coaches are salesmen. They are going into people's houses and living rooms and selling their program. A lot of them are not telling the truth. But you're talking to a 16-year-old, 15-year-old, 17-year-old kid and their family that's likely never been down this road, and you're selling your program. Okay, well, what happens when that person gets to the program and realizes that what you sold them is somewhat of a bill of goods? They should have the opportunity, just like coaches, just like other students, to be able to transfer and not have to miss a beat or sit out a year or do any of that unnecessary stuff that they had implemented for decades. So to me, they've righted the ship to some extent. I have no problem with the transfer portal. I have no problem with the installation of NIL and how guys can make money off of their image and likeness. I just wish that back in the late 80s and early 90s when I was there, I think about that. Like, wow, I was a professional baseball player playing my senior year of college football. Mm-hmm. Like, how many opportunities could have been there for me around that community had that been an opportunity for me? So I have nothing against it. I believe, you know, to me, if you go back to youth sports and high school sports, the worst word out there is specialization. And it kind of goes in part to the first part of your question about playing multiple sports. Every athlete, every kid out there, play as many sports as you possibly can. And then let the one sport or maybe two sports define itself for you. That's kind of how it worked for me. And I know I was a better football player because I played baseball and basketball. I was a tougher basketball player because I played football. You know, I was a better baseball player because I wasn't afraid of getting hit by a 90 mile an hour fastball because I got hit by 250-pound linebackers. Like, you know, all of the mindset that went in all intertwined with each sport to me. So I always fully endorse kids, my own kids, other kids I mentor, play multiple sports. It will help you. There were experiences, relationships that on the baseball field, there's not a lot of us playing baseball, not a lot of black men, black kids that play baseball. So when I was on teams, I was one of two in high school and one of two in college. So I'm not saying that that was a negative because that helped me to grow in relationships with the white culture and extend relationships into adulthood by being around that culture. And hopefully they were able to glean stuff from me too. So that dynamic is it's more method to the madness. There's more meat on the bone than just playing a sport. There can be a lot of other things that can transpire from those experiences.
You know, that's so funny you said that because I grew up playing baseball too. And I had the same experience being, you know, most times the only black kid on the field. And, you know, and fortunately for me, not to the extent that you were able to play, but I was, you know, typically a little bit ahead of the other kids mm-hmm. in terms of my ability and skill. And, you know, there was a benefit to that too, right? And mm-hmm. so to your point about being able to recognize environments and be able to socialize a certain way to your benefit in a culture that's different from yours. I mean, I learned those skills early on, and I typically learned them, not necessarily, and it was a similar dynamic in the classroom, but it was different on the field because that was more social, and I was able to learn how to navigate in those environments to really be able to sort of move along the way I needed to be successful with those individuals. So I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, there's, you know, there's been times here in Kansas City and different places where the black community has wanted me to be more enveloped into the black community. And I'm more in a diverse community, go to more of a diverse church. My kids went more to different schools. And I felt like there was a calling for me, like if those people don't get connected to me or if I don't get connected to them, I might be the only black person that they have a real conversation with. I might be the only black man that they open up to or that are receptive to some of the things that are going on in society. So I can never feel like I'm going to close the door on that and just isolate my family or myself into one community. The one thing I know that's guaranteed is that there's always going to be black people on this earth. There's always going to be white people on this earth. There's always going to be other races on this earth. So like the isolation part, I never really bought into because I feel like there's an onus for me to be who I am and let other people and all people see that, my wife included, my kids included, and maybe strike up that one conversation that might change their lens about how things are going on in the society. DJ, you mentioned about social media. I'm pretty active on social media, and I'm not shy in challenging folks to different perspectives, whether not just football, but in life, in society, in race, in culture, in politics. So I feel like that's always kind of been the onus of me. So fortunately, I wore a jersey for a platform, but I don't just use that platform for sports. I feel like there's definitely, God has blessed me with the ability to relay a message in the simplest form, whether it's a touchdown by the Chiefs or politics or race or police violence or what have you, that anybody can have a general conversation with me and there's not going to be any personal jabs or me personal agendas or anything like that. It's just more about that. So there's, you know, I feel like my package is more, is bigger than just the sports and the banking and all that. And I try to wear all of those hats.
Love it. That's great, D.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about your engagement in sport. Obviously, at this point, you've got a lot going on in your life and the mortgage business that you run and manage. How is that going right now? We have so many different perspectives on where the economy is, how that impacts people's purchasing power, et cetera. How are you seeing things right now?
Well, things are definitely slow. This is kind of the storm that people anticipated with the recession that's going on. But I try to keep things simple. And to me, what I preach to my kids, what I talk with first-time home buyers, with other family members, is that no matter what the economy is doing, no matter where we are in regards to mortgage rates, et cetera, you can't convince me that home ownership is still not the optimum goal or should not still be the optimum goal. And it should definitely be ahead of renting. That's something that I feel like is a constant. Now, you may not be able to afford the higher dollar houses because the interest rates were lower over the last 3 years, but you can still afford a home. And people who are paying $1,200 or $1,500 in rent can afford a $200,000 house. So I always try to take opportunities to share that message that there are zero down percent opportunities. There are minimum 3% down programs, and that you can put more money in, because if you leave that rental house or you leave that rented apartment, you have no equity. You have nothing established. But if you leave that house or sell that house, you have equity and you'll be building something as far as a savings into your own future, into your own pocket. So I am a strong endorser of home ownership. Now, talking about the rates and where they are, like we are still today in rates a sub 6%. You're still in the 5.875 range. We just got spoiled because they were so low for the previous few years. But when I first got into business in 2000, the rates were at 8 and 9%. Mm-hmm. So we're still kind of in the same window where it makes sense to buy homes. So whenever I get an opportunity, I try to preach that message and make sure that people understand that you don't have to have a large savings account to buy a house. You don't have to have 20% down. You can start into a starter home, build up equity and build, you know, move on to the next home. Having a plan as opposed to just staying in your comfort zone of paying rent or in an apartment because that's how you grew up. You don't know any better, et cetera. So it's more of a mission for me. It's always been more of a mission for me than just a job. and just a career. So I try to get that message out there, especially to our people whenever possible, because I want everybody to know that home ownership is real. We've been fortunate. We just moved into a new house back in December, almost a year now since we've been in a new house. Our previous house we were in for 25 and a half years.
Wow.
And we built up equity to the part where we could move on once our kids left the house and get into a house that's more conducive to us as being empty nesters and use that equity from that house to do so. And so it, like, that's the message. My life is that message to be able to present to that. And whether the economy will have ebbs and flows, we're going to have some windy, strong weather days through March, April, May. And then when that April and May come next year, some of the skies are going to open up and the rates are going to drop down a little bit. And we're going to see an influx of opportunity for people to buy homes. And I just want to make sure that I'm weathering the storm and here when that opportunity arises.
Yeah, that's a great message, man, because I really believe in that as well. Having been a buyer of real estate and homes, you know, with my family as well, and being having that ability, as you just shared, to be able to sort of jump up to the next level with the equity that you mm-hmm. build up and the kinds of opportunities that it creates for you financially. And another thing I think it does, it creates a lot of flexibility and options for you as well. In terms of how you're able to manage those. And I think we have a younger generation that is not, they're missing the message about that value. And they're not taking advantage of this opportunity and are taking the route of, I'm just going to rent, or I'm just going to sort of, you know, not take the chance of or put my savings or whatever the case may be into a home ownership. And I think that's a huge mistake. Totally agree
with that. Yeah, I agree. I think this generation, the Gen Zs, I guess you would call them, they're into Bitcoin. They want to put some money into Bitcoin. And I'm totally an endorser of investing. But, you know, to me, you're investing in something like that, but then you're paying rent.
Right.
Or you're leasing a car that's not yours. I mean, there's some dynamics and credit card usage and the interest rates that you're paying here versus the interest rate that you would pay for a house. There's so many different things. That's why I think financial literacy should be a part of school systems, starting in middle school, so that when mm-hmm. they get to high school and they get to college, they won't make some of the pitfalls and mistakes that I know I made getting into college. And, oh, there's a credit card that will accept me? I never had a credit card before. Next thing you know, your credit card balance is up and you got an 18% interest rate and you can't, $20 a month ain't going to pay anything. You know what I mean? So that literacy is important. It's real. And if we're not passing out a message of enlightenment, then what do we expect for the next generation? They're just going to continue to make the same mistakes.
Yeah. I do have to ask you, when's the last time you were back home in New Jersey? Do you go back there often?
Yeah, I get back home 2-3 times a year. I was home, gosh, this fall. Sometime, I think right before the season, I went back to Jersey. I'll get back usually right after the season and then one time in the summer. My parents are still there. My sister's still there. Aunts and uncles, cousins are all still right there within a 3-mile radius. So I get back home, get some real pizza, get some real Italian food, see my family, and then I bounce out back to Kansas City. So, yeah, I get back probably 3 times a year.
Well, I got to tell you, man, I mean, I've been spending a lot of time in the New York area, New York, New Jersey, just kind of flying in and out. And every time I'm there, I see that action. I think about you.
Yeah.
Every time.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, D, obviously with everything going on, man, you probably don't have a whole lot of time to think about what's ahead, but it's also just a part of your nature. So what new challenges, opportunities are on the horizon for you?
So I'd say multiple. One, from a banking standpoint, is I'm still hiring people in the mortgage business right now. A lot of mortgage brokers are shutting their doors. So there's a lot of viable opportunity out there, a lot of viable options for mortgage loan officers that are elsewhere that I'm looking for here in the Kansas City area to grow my team with Central Bank of the Midwest. So that's kind of at the forefront from a business standpoint. Also from my my personal, what do you call it? My personal brand, I guess you can say, trying to grow that. I feel like with us not having kids in the house and the positions that I have in the media world, there's more opportunities to kind of grow that brand and connect with some corporations to do some special things around here. I'd like to I know Tony Gonzalez way back when I was playing with him with the Kansas City Chiefs, he did a 101, football 101 for women. And I feel like that would be a cool deal where he did it at like an AMC theater where you kind of broke down football for people who want to know more about the game of football. I feel like that would be a cool thing to do. And then just kind of serving, man. I just try to feel like there's kids. I coached competitive baseball for 11 years. Those kids are either graduating college, some are playing professional baseball, and they're kind of coming into their adulthood. So I want to kind of be there for my kids as well as those kids to kind of coach them up. Just because I coached them on the base paths and in baseball, that doesn't mean that that relationship was just for the game of baseball. So as far as what's on the horizon, you know me, I don't like to sit still. I like to always be doing something, but doing something with a purpose. And I feel like that's kind of where the direction of my path is going right now, is serving some of these young adults and being a voice for them that is unbiased. You know what I mean? That's just going to give the real and hope that they can like stay away from some of the pitfalls that happen with a lot of these young people and young adults.
Well said.
Yeah. And as we sort of close, D, you know, one of the things that I think is important that you represent and you talk about too, is this notion of, you know, having confidence in whatever we do.
Yeah.
Whether you were playing football, broadcasting, the mortgage business, is having confidence. And sometimes I think, even in our generation, it's easy to get paralyzed thinking we have to be perfect.
Yeah.
In our execution. And it's not about being perfect. Sometimes things are learning experiences too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, recently you asked me about Case and going back and speaking. That was one of my messages to the current doctoral students is, you know, your journey doesn't have to be about being perfect, because that can paralyze you at times.
That's right.
Sometimes it's about moving through the best you can and just seeing what happens on the other side of it and learning from it and then continuing to move forward. So part of the reason I say that, man, is I'm, you know, Charles and I talk a lot about, you know, giving back and opportunities to do that. So when you're here, maybe we can connect and talk a little bit about what that might look like on a broader scale, too, because this paralysis thing, man, is real. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to see us lose opportunities in younger generations thinking, you know, I was scared. I didn't want to mess it up.
Yeah.
You know, we can't always worry about
that. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I see this, you know, I've got a senior in high school who's, you know, in that college process. And, you know, I think these kids are so focused on they have to go to this school in order for like everything to fall into place where it's supposed to be. And that's, as you all know, we all know this. That's not the case.
Opportunity can come in any form,
in any place, and you're going to end up where you're supposed to be, right?
That's right.
Then you take that and you build on it, and then you create. And to DJ's point, I love what you said. Like, you know, nothing's perfect in terms of how we, you know, matriculation, the different paths they're not always straight, right? You know, there's Denzel Washington saying fences, you take the crookeds with the straights, you know, we have to make sure these young people understand that you're going to trip and fall sometimes along the way, and it's not going to be perfect, but you get up, you dust yourself off, and you move forward in that direction that you're headed right now, and you figure it out the best you can, and it all will work itself out. And I don't think that mentality is there enough. I really don't. And we can help you.
I would say this, you know, there's one of my favorite movies, if not my favorite movie, in Men of Honor, about Carl Brashears, the Navy diver. Yeah. And one intricate scene in that movie was where the sergeant was facing him asking who he was. And I remember having conversations with kids. Like, I used baseball as just the mechanism to communicate with kids and get them to challenge themselves. And to me, I always learned that the worst place you can be as a person, never mind an athlete, is the comfort zone, where you are just existing and you're comfortable and whatever you're doing and you're not challenging yourself, you're not reaching. But also an aspect of a lot of our kids and some, even some of us adults, we don't know who we are. So you're asking that question to a person of who are you, and having them stand up there like Carl Brashears did and say, this is who I am. I am a Navy diver. I am this. And once you speak it, not just think it, but once you're speaking it, one, you're speaking it to somebody. That means there's accountability. So if I tell you that I am a family man, a father of five, a grandfather of three, this, and this, and I go through that list, now I'm accountable to you, right? And now you can hold me accountable. So if I'm not doing something, then like there's accountability there and credibility with that conversation. So if we're challenging, there's a message that I would present to people is, let's challenge our kids to know who they are and speak it. Because once you speak it, it's empowering to yourself. And then you might step outside that comfort zone a little bit and step outside of that boxed in mindset, like you said, going to this certain school and doing this certain way, and recognize that there are other opportunities, other ways to grow in this world. But I kind of feel like if you don't know who you are and you're not willing to speak on who you are, like if I would love to believe that if my son was in here, he would say, I am Torin Hughes. I am a medical student. This is what my plan is. This is where I feel, where I fit in. This is what I'm going to do. This is how my life is going to go. The empowerment of speaking that. Mm-hmm. There's something about that dynamic that will propel him because he's spoken it outward. That's how I feel like if we're not preaching that message to our kids some way, not hammering it into them where they become robotic, but making sure they know and understand how important it is, how it can mold their life. And that's important.
It is important.
Yeah, I love it.
So listen, man, as we always do, did we miss anything, and or do you have any questions for Charles or myself?
Well, my phone just went off. I just saw that your PayPal came through from Fantasy Football. So thanks a lot for that. Appreciate that.
You know what that's for? You know what that's what's for? What's tickets to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I can join you. That's right. I'm already there, but in case I want to bring somebody else. That's what you're saying?
Yeah. So are you really in that Hall of Fame with me?
I feel like the way I won the championship.
Wait a minute.
I won the championship, Charles, let me tell you, there's not been nobody that's talked as much trash that called his shot. I called my shot every single way, challenging every cat, all that, and wiped them out to the championship. And now I'm starting this year, I'm undefeated, 12-0 on the season. Like, if that don't get me in the Hall of Fame, there ain't no Hall of Fame.
Okay, so you're not. Well, I got, you can buy a ticket just in case it doesn't. But I sent you that money. But literally, when we look at that website, there's one person that is clearly in that Hall of Fame. The website tells us. Now, we don't have to talk about who that is. We don't need to do that. But I'm not trying to.
You bring it up, you basically saying
he's there now. But I would love to see you win again this year. It is lonely, man. I'm telling you. That's one of the reasons I'm in there. I won back.
So I guess we understand who's in the Hall of Fame now.
I won back-to-back championships in this league we've been in. What are we, like 9 years now?
At least, yeah.
Yeah, like back-to-back. And Dana's undefeated this year, and he already has one championship. So it looks like things go as they're looking like.
Don't put that jinx on me. Don't try to jinx me. Don't try to jinx me now. See, Charles, see how he doing? Try to toss salt on my game.
He definitely trying to get you.
But he's killing us this year, man. I've won three games. So I'm out. But we'll see, man. He's looking good. But to be undefeated at this point, And like, no one's really even come close to you.
There's been a couple of ones that I felt a little wind, felt a little breeze on my shoulder. Just a couple, you know. Other ones, they've been kind of stiff on them, you know.
Well, listen, let me
go back to the original question. You said, any questions for you guys? I want to know how you, the conscious vibe, tell me about how you guys structured this and how things are going. I know you've been on, you know, multiple seasons. I don't know if you consider it seasons, but, you know, definitely, you know, a bunch of episodes. Give me the overview of you guys and how this all came together and how it's going.
Yeah, no, you know, I think this, you know, we've talked about this a little bit in, you know, some of the conversations where DJ and I are sort of just talking through the conscious vibe and what that's been for us and why we started this whole thing. And, you know, I think it's turned out to be exactly what we thought it could be. And I think it's headed in a direction beyond what we could possibly have even imagined. I think we're in a really great spot. Season 4. We wanted to be able to have this dialogue with thought-provoking and successful people in life like yourself, and illuminate those conversations with people or an audience that could really benefit from the messages that we are able to sort of have and share in these dialogues. And so for us, I think it was really more about taking some of those backyard conversations that we were having when we first met on, you know, my patio, his patio, and taking it to an audience and then bringing other people like yourself into the conversation that can really, you know, hit home some of these important themes in life that DJ and I truly believe in as well. And, you know, share the great blessing of, you know, getting to know people like yourself. And I know you and DJ have a longstanding friendship, how all those things really buy into how we think and how we live our lives, not to mention, you know, the value that it has to have these kinds of relationships.
Yeah, cool. D, you know, honestly, man, it's an opportunity for Charles and I to be vessels and to not have to be necessarily center stage, even though it may appear that way. It's really an opportunity for us to bring people forward who've added value into our lives for a greater audience. And honestly, man, that's how I look at it. So the fact that you've been on here twice obviously speaks to the impact, you know, you've had on me and Charles.
Appreciate it.
Even Jay, our producer, who has said, you know, she loves everyone that comes on the show, but she said two of her favorite are Danon and Cliff. Oh, you know, and I'll just say that clearly. So for me, man, that's a big part of it, is to bring people forward of substance who can have an impact on a much greater audience. And Charles and I have the luxury of being able to ask those questions. Yeah. That's what it is for me. I mean, we can sit here and just have Charles and I talking back and forth and have a lot of fun. But the beauty of it is when we can bring some folks on and we get the phone calls, man, you know, didn't know that Danon also did this. Didn't realize Cliff did this. That's where the beauty of it really comes in. And sometimes I even learn things that I didn't know about folks that I know.
Yep.
So that continues to be a bigger part of it for me. And like Charles said, that's something we sort of envisioned. I say it all the time, man. We pride ourselves on the fact that literally not one edit. Wow. Literally not one edit, not a word, and I think that speaks to, part of it is our approach, but it really speaks to the guests that we have, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that, you know.
That's awesome, man. Well, you guys do a great job. I've been checking y'all out for a while, and you know, it's always great to be a part of this round table and these discussions, because as you mentioned, you never know that one comment, that one statement, that one topic that you tackle and how it can literally tackle somebody else and where they are in their life and what can be an inspiration. So credit to y'all, props to y'all. Y'all doing a great job, man. Keep it rolling.
Well, we appreciate you, man. We really do. And I look forward to meeting you in person, man, when you're in town. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, so we'll golf on Monday when you get here, you know, hit me, and then we'll grab a piece of fish or something somewhere.
I like
that. Monday night.
All right.
And sounds like a plan. Put a little pressure on you. We're going to put a little pressure on you live to make sure you have an undefeated season. Monday Night Football, right?
Wait, why are you trying to jinx me?
Yeah, no, man. Look, I want you to. I actually want you to join me in this place we call the Hall of Fame. Like, I think you think I'm kidding, man. It's cold. I'm lonely. I'm tired, man. And I think you stand as good as
not observant. I don't know what is. I don't know how you heard
I'm
that.
Selfish, David, man. I'm selfish, man.
I don't know how you heard it. But
I feel like right. Charles, I feel like it's kind of a backdoor dig. Like you waiting for me to be like 13-1.
Pause.
You think? Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. You know him like I do. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
All right, D. Well, look, man, I can't wait to see you. Yeah, looking forward to you coming in on Monday. And I really, I was kind of short notice, man. But I tell you, you, as always, delivered. And it's been a pleasure having you.
Same here, brother. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate you, Dana. Take care, man.
And thank you for joining us on The Conscious Vibe.
Thank you for joining us.
And check us out on tcvpodcast.com.